Okay, our next speaker is Hans Weichselbaum?
Good.
Something like that. Hans is speaking on Does Science Lead One to Atheism? And he's a postgraduate student at Massey University, all the way from New Zealand.
Good afternoon, and thank you for coming to my talk. Well, great to be here. And please don't panic when you see the title. That is the title of my thesis. And I made an English translation for you. Otherwise, nobody is coming to my talk. So, does science lead you one to atheism? If you look at that question, you will say, what a silly question. I mean, we've got more than 300 people here who will tell you science does not lead you to atheism. But if you go to another conference, you will find 300 people who will tell you, yes, science leads you to atheism. So what is the problem here? Well, in order to see the problem, you have to step back a little bit and do some philosophy. I hope you can handle a bit of philosophy at this time of the day. It's going to be not too bad. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Well, if you look at that first word here, one of the words here, naturalism, well, philosophy of science looks at how does a scientist proceed in his work? What kind of knowledge does he produce, or he or she? How is that knowledge qualified, assessed? How are scientific theories constructed? And a philosopher will distinguish between two different types of naturalism. You've got methodological naturalism and ontological naturalism. Methodological naturalism, I just call it MN now to save on time. It is when you assume naturalism in science. So when you do science, you assume that you have only got natural explanations, only natural causation. You can still believe in supernatural belief, you can believe in God, but in science, while you do science, you only consider natural explanations. That's quite common as well in other professions. You know, think of an engineer, think of your car breaks down, and the mechanic says, well, I can't find a natural explanation, it must be something supernatural. Some demons are messing around with your car, you wouldn't be happy. You expect the mechanic to come up with a natural explanation. Doesn't matter if he's an atheist or a Christian or a Buddhist. This opposite of natural MN is ontological naturalism. That means natural world is all there is. There's nothing else. Okay, so all what science discovered, what science is going to discover, all the things which we are not going to discover because it's too complex for our little brain, it's all natural. Okay? Now let's just look at a little bit of history of MN. There are two ways of explaining MN. One way is it came slowly, developed slowly over time. Supernatural explanations were slowly replaced by natural ones. You know, just think of lightning and thunder and earthquakes and everything we can explain today naturally. So slowly supernatural explanations were replaced. And the other idea is that MN developed during the Middle Ages out of Christian thinking. In Christian thinking, you distinguish between God the creator and the created world. And the scientist studies a created world and doesn't use any supernatural explanation. That was seen as a cheap refuge, using supernatural explanations by the natural philosophers in the Middle Ages. And then in the 20th century, we've got 1986, Paul de Vries from Wheaton College. He created the term methodological naturalism. He came up with that term. Now let's just look, I've got the wrong slide here. So that is a slide for that. Now let's just look at science. How do we define science? Well, Eugenie Scott from National Center of Science Education says, science is a way of knowing that attempts to explain the natural world using natural causes. You can see natural, so it's very much connected with natural. Second one is Michael Ruse, a philosopher of science. He says science, by definition, only deals with the natural. And the last one is from a court case, Kitzmiller versus Dover in 2005. Again, natural explanation, and by definition, science is connected to natural. Okay, so what is today's view of this natural thing? There are three schools of thought here. First of all, science is based on MN, and that is most philosophers, scientists, and theologians support the view. And I hope to convince you that this is the right view for science. The second one is, it's a Belgian philosopher, Martin Baudry. He came up with the idea of provisional MN. So what people criticize in MN is this is a supposition of science. So before you do science, you presuppose only natural causes, okay? Whereas PMN, provisional MN, gets rid of that. It considers supernatural hypotheses, but so far the verdict was negative. We always found a natural explanation for it. And the third one is get rid of MN and assume ON, ontological naturalism. And I've got one quote here. So a couple of scientists support that view. Richard Levantin, for example, he argues, you know, when he goes into his lab and does science, he cannot even assume that there is something supernatural. God could scoop in any time, or some demons could mess up his experiments. He cannot do science that way. He must assume that there is nothing supernatural. Okay? So that is ontological naturalism. So MN came under attack now. First of all, from the atheist side, as I just explained, some people assume you have to have supernatural, you have to exclude supernatural causes from the start on. But interestingly, MN came also under attack from the religious side. And I want to use Alvin Plantinger here as a spokesperson. Now, Alvin Plantinger is a foremost philosopher of religion here in the United States, has written dozens of books and papers, but he's very critical of MN. And I want to go through his arguments. Well, he's got a couple of arguments against MN. I just want to use one, single one here. So let's see, I take from the religious side. And he doesn't like the a priori definition of science, that MN comes in a priori. Science should follow the evidence wherever it leads. So science is too narrow to describe reality, okay? So if we come across something which we cannot explain naturally, we should actually allow supernatural explanations. Okay, that's his argument. Now, just look at some counter-arguments now, some responses. Well, first of all, it would be a science stopper. Okay, it would stop science. For example, dark matter. We've got no idea what dark matter is. It's not made out of protons and neutrons or quarks. It's something mysterious. It sort of holds the universe together. So why not put in a supernatural cause? But it would lead to a stop in science. Cosmologists would have no reason for carrying on looking into dark matter. We've got an explanation now. Can you see the problem? And you know, in 10 years' time, or perhaps next month, we have an explanation, we can explain it, and that would be a God of the gaps argument, because now we've got a natural explanation, and we are pushing God out, which is not good for science, it's not good for theology either. And then also, most theologians see nature as a functional integrity, built, created with functional integrity. It's sort of a whole system, and it's self-sufficient. God created the universe that it sort of handles itself through the laws of nature. God is the primary cause, and he acts through secondary causes, which are the laws of nature, which we scientists are describing. And the last one is the universality of science. Planting is obviously arguing for a theistic science, for a Christian science. And what would stop a Hindu, for example, to come up with a Hindu science, including reincarnation and karma? And then you would have a Buddhist science, and you would have, well, in New Zealand, we would have a Maori science. It's actually quite a problem in New Zealand. The Maoris, with their legends, actually want to bring that into science, and science wouldn't be universal anymore. I must add that Plantinga is sort of quite cautious here. He distinguishes between the basic science, physics and chemistry. He says, well, we don't need to bring in theism here, but the higher sciences, you know, psychology and sociology, we should include theistic concepts, the concept of sin, for example. So what can we do now? It looks like PMN looks a good solution, this provisional MN. Well, the problem is, if you accept PMN as a provisional concept, at what stage do we give up looking for a natural cause, natural explanation? For example, origin of life. We have been looking now for 20, 30 years for the origin of life, and we haven't found anything. We got pretty far, but you know, we are still very far away from having an explanation. Should we give up now and say, well, same as we had before with the dark matter, should we just give up now and say we don't have an explanation and just it must be supernatural? Another example would be consciousness, very, very difficult problem. It's obviously connected with nature, with our natural brain, but could it be something supernatural, or it can be explained naturally one day? And secondly, how to distinguish between natural and supernatural? That is a huge problem. We will see it's a huge problem. Martin Baudry, who I mentioned already, this Belgian philosopher, that's how he defines supernatural. We propose to define supernatural as referring to a phenomenon which has its basis in entities and processes that transcends the spatial-temporal realm of impersonal matter and energy described by modern science. Well, that's how philosophers talk. So, anyway, there are a couple of problems here with this definition. Well, first of all, remember we define science by nature. We use natural to define science. Now he uses science to define natural. So we've got a circular argument. It's not good. And secondly, he uses the term modern science. What does that mean? The science shifts its goalposts all the time. Just think about 200 years ago, the concept of conservation of matter was something as the holy grail for chemistry. It couldn't be broken. Then Einstein comes along and says, well, you can actually change matter into energy, so we have to change our concept again. So modern science, in 100 years' time, it will be something very different from what we see today. So that brings me to the next chapter here. That was my pet chapter in my thesis here. I came to almost 10,000 words here. How to distinguish between natural and supernatural. Can we use space and time to distinguish? No, we can't. Just think of a black hole that is a singularity and it's outside of space and time. Time stops in a black hole and it's not in time in space anymore. So we can't use that. Or think of the miracle of water being transformed into wine. That happens in space and time, but it's definitely not something natural. Described by the basic natural sciences, chemistry and physics, now again it doesn't work as you have seen already, follows regularities. I think that is a very strong argument. Things which are natural follow certain laws which we can discover. Even something which is not yet explained, like quantum entanglement, things like that, I'm sure we'll find a law that it follows some laws. I thought it was a strong argument, but my supervisor said, no, it's not, because, you know, the elves in my garden, which are certainly supernatural, they follow some laws, they have breakfast every morning at 8 o'clock. Well, that's how a philosopher thinks. I still think that lawful behavior is points to natural, and if something breaks a natural law, then it's supernatural. Genuine design, again, here we must be very careful, because there are lots of things, features in nature, which looks generally designed. Just think of a snowflake. It's beautifully designed, but we can break it down into natural physical steps. Purposefulness, again, teleology, eye looks very much designed. But again, if you can break it down into small steps, small improvements, which you can explain by laws of physics and chemistry, then you can explain the evolution of an eye, for example, quite well without introducing supernatural. So the attack from the religious side, I'm quoting here now William Dembski. He is a bit more blunt than Alvin Plantinga, but the same wavelengths. He says we need to realize that MN is a functional equivalent of a full-blown ON. I disagree with that. I think you will see by now that there's quite a difference between MN and ON. I can still be a religious scientist by working under the restrictions of MN. And Dembski's solution is simply dump NM. Amen. So he wants to have an intervening God, and which must be sort of proven by science. The only two alternatives in that case is either we have got a theistic science or we have got an atheistic science. And most scientists are going to reject theistic science for the reasons I have given already. So it's not universal and it wouldn't be acceptable. So it would push you into atheism, basically. Okay, and from the atheistic side, we find, well, there are plenty of examples here. Richard Dawkins, Steven Weinberg. Steven Weinberg is a Nobel Prize winner in physics, so a very, very strong authority. Jerry Coyne, I mean, there are dozens and hundreds. Philosophers, Daniel Dennett, Barbara Forrest, Martin Baudry. They say in the past all supernatural explanations have been replaced by natural ones, and we can expect the pattern to continue into the future. So it's inductive reasoning. It's not a very strong argument. And science will eventually answer any question and resolve every problem given enough time and resources. Now that's typical scientism. I would add to that once we've got a natural explanation for something, it doesn't mean that there is no supernatural explanation. I think that God holds his whole creation all the time. So if you see an apple falling from the trees, yes, we have got a natural explanation. Gravity is pulling the apple down, or Einstein would say space is pushing it down, but it doesn't mean that God is not active in this process. Okay? So once you've got a natural explanation, there can also be a supernatural explanation at the same time. I want to give Richard Dawkins the last word. Now, I probably have got more time. Richard Dawkins says, I'm attacking God, all gods, anything and everything supernatural, wherever and whenever they have been and will be invented. I enjoy reading Richard Dawkins. He's a very good communicator. His explanations in evolution are brilliant, I think. But he is obviously not speaking as a scientist anymore. He's got a worldview, and he uses his authority as a scientist to want to convince you. So if you hear an argument like that, you can say, well, it doesn't come from a scientist. It is an atheist who wants to spread his worldview. Now, these slides are all very boring in philosophy. There's no pictures, so I've got another one here. Just to illustrate a little bit MN. So you've got the MN is the natural world, and you've got something supernatural around it, okay? It can be much bigger than supernatural. It's a question mark, you know? You don't have to accept supernaturalism, but there could be something. And ON, you have only got the natural world. That's all there is. Even things which you haven't discovered yet, it's all, everything is going to be natural. Now, it's quite different from, I didn't mention that, Stephen Jay Gould came up with, he wanted to sort of see fights between science and religion. He wanted to say, well, there are two non-overlapping magisteria, and one is dealing with the empirical realm, and the other one deals with the ultimate meaning, value, morals, things like that. I think it's a bit oversimplified because they do interact. I mean, religion makes claims on reality, on the real world. So it's a little bit simplified. I think there is some overlap. But thanks to MN, methodological naturalism, I think you can be a religious scientist. And don't have to. You know, how do these atheists deal with this religious scientist? I mean, there are thousands, there are probably millions of religious scientists. What is their explanations? Well, Richard Dawkins and Jerry Coyne and all these people say, well, these people have cognitive dissonance. So they've got two conflicting worldviews in their head. No, I disagree, it doesn't conflict. You know, you can have both worldviews you have got the methods of science and the supernatural. You can hold that quite happily, and there's no conflict whatsoever. Okay, that's all I've got to say.
Centuries ago would say are supernatural. That would be heavier than air flight. It would be talking to somebody in New Zealand from this room. Is the term supernatural more referring to our level of understanding of things than really the way things are?
Yeah, look, as I said, it's the more we understand about the natural world, the difference between natural, the demarcation between natural and supernatural does change. I mean, lightning and thunder, 1,000 years ago, it was supernatural. The gods were angry, and it was the only explanation. Once we discovered electricity, we can see the discharge. Earthquakes or whatever it was. Flying, something heavier than air, I would say birds are flying, so I don't think people would have considered it as supernatural.
But no, it's the idea. So
Methodological
naturalism going to explain more things, and like it has already. And if so, are we creating a false dichotomy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Donovan, sir.
Oh, somebody else is first.
Oh, go right ahead.
Wouldn't another strong argument against this kind of thing right here be that scientists have got to take active role in bioethics, for example, big subject that's going to be more and more and more important?
Yes, ethics is, of course, what is ethical, what kind of scientific studies can count as ethical, stem cells, that's what you mean?
Isn't it important? Don't we have something positive to give more than just an atheist that's ethical?
I'm not quite sure if you can convince. When I think of science, I always think of physics and chemistry. My background is chemistry. So when it comes to humanities, you know, psychology and sociology, I think it's not a strong demarcation anymore. Yeah, so ethics becoming very important here.
Okay, and over there.
When I saw your title, I thought you were referring to a quote by Heisenberg, who said something like, bottom, you meet God there.
So I didn't understand
that. So you thought about what you might have meant by that.
So I didn't understand the question quite well.
I thought you were, in your title, you were referring to something that Heisenberg said.
No, no.
Heisenberg?
Yes, yeah. Uncertainty, yeah. Yeah. No, it's not.
So you said something like, when you first take a sip from the glass of science, you become an atheist. But after you finish the whole glass, you find God at the bottom, or you find God there.
Yeah.
So he himself is a Christian, and he somehow seems to be. People, atheists, I've noticed, wonder what that meant. And so I'm still not quite sure what he meant either, but I wondered if you might have.
I'm not still not quite sure what you mean. Yeah.
It's okay.
By that quote.
It's a very fascinating quote. Does anyone else have comments on that? Janet?
Not on that.
Not on that. Any other comments on that?
Yeah.
Peter?
Well, isn't Heisenberg saying that all matter is somehow dependent upon consciousness, and consciousness itself really can't be natural because you can't observe it. It is, in fact, the observer. So at the bottom of all matter or all naturalism is by definition a supernaturalism if matter is somehow dependent on a conscious observer.
Another way to look at it.
Okay.
Very good. Janet, you had a question or comment?
Sort of both in the same lines. So I'm glad you mentioned the problems of distinguishing between natural and supernatural. I think those terms are very unhelpful. So one of the other issues is it precludes God acting through the natural.
Yeah.
It makes this false. So you better just speak maybe of the existence of a spiritual reality. If you talk about non-material realities, well, science has discovered that as well, so that reduces the elevated dichotomy. But if you talk about the spiritual reality versus not, that might. But even a lot of science these days is recognizing the existence of some sort of non-material, perhaps spiritual reality.
All right, thank you very much.